there, everybody. Today I am having a conversation with a person that I've known for a very long time now in our roles as social workers. But I want to say that the topic we're talking about is a tough topic. And as you know, we are starting a series of conversations with people about tough things that some parents have to face. And so today we're talking about support for parents after baby loss. So Vicky Culling, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. And I'd really love you to introduce yourself so that parents can hear who you are.
Ko Vicky Culling Takuingoa. My name is Vicky Culling, no Otipotiaho. I grew up in Dunedin, and kei te Porirua aho e noho ana ināinei. I live in Porirua, just north of Porirua City, overlooking the beautiful Pāwatahanui Inlet. And I am a bereaved parent. Ultimately, that's what brings me to this work that I do. So our daughter died well over 20 years ago. And when she died, I had a background in social work and education. So I ended up that experience, and those experiences led me to doing the work I do, which is around baby loss, training and education for health professionals and volunteers, and providing support to families as well through the organisation SANS.
Thank you, Vicky, and I really, really appreciate you being here and being able to share your wise thoughts with us today. I wonder, you know, you've talked about your own experience and the idea that you're an educator, but, you know, you've been doing this a long time. What keeps you keeping on doing this work?
I think for me, it's knowing that there's a need out there for good support for whānau when a baby dies, and we don't do that very well in our community, our society. We don't have structured, funded, sustainable support, which has been something that I've been complaining about for a long time. And hopefully we will see that change over the next couple of years. But it's around, I had really good support. I had just finished my degree in social work. I was surrounded by really great people, and my family were really supportive. So I came through this experience of our daughter dying. I was 10 days overdue and went in to be induced, and heard those words that every parent, that just fractures our world, which is they couldn't find a heartbeat. And then my experience was one of incredible, it was an incredible tragedy for us, and I felt supported through it. And so I was lucky, and I went to support meetings a couple of years later and realised there were a lot of people who didn't have good support. And yeah, it seemed like a natural thing to move into this area. And what keeps me going is, yeah, wanting to make a difference. And it's a legacy for my daughter's life. Right. Her little life may have been brief, but it certainly wasn't small. And it still impacts on the world and through me and through, you know, my husband and my living daughter as well.
So thank you so much again. What would you like to share with parents?
Well, one thing, I want to go back to what you said at the start about being a tough conversation, because one thing that I've done is sort of reframed how I think about those difficult and tough conversations. And it's because of the work of a woman called Catherine Mannix, who's from the UK, who works in palliative care. She talks about tender conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really lovely way of reframing it, thinking about it. Yeah, this is a tender conversation. So when we are talking to families about the loss of their baby, about any loss, and of course, but especially in this area, thinking about approaching tenderly. And if we think about tenderness, it's a nice way to think. And also another thing I really encourage people to think about is, or go and have a look at, is a grief model called ring theory. And that model is, if we think of the family, the whānau at the centre of the rings, and then concentric rings going out like a tree, tree stump, then the family at the middle, we do comfort in. Anything that goes into the family is comfort. Anything out, any opinions, wondering, questions, that goes outways, out towards other extended family. Or anyway, have a look at that model and think about that, because what families need at the time when their baby dies is compassion and support. And one of the things that we do in our first world Western culture is we're a little bit grief averse. It can be very uncomfortable, but we want to make things better for people. So we want to, it's awful. It's awful what they've gone through, and what on earth could I say? So I want to say something that might make things a little bit better. I might want to find a silver lining. And I might say things like, well, at least you've got your living children, and at least you know why your baby died, or at least you're young and you can go on to have others. And I know someone whose baby died and they're fine, and I've had two miscarriages and I'm fine. And we try and make people feel better, and we can't. And it's okay not to make people feel better. It's okay just to be a witness to their pain. Very hard to do, to sit with someone in their pain, but it's fine for us just to acknowledge it and say, I'm so sorry. Sorry to hear that your baby died, and I'm here to listen. And the best gift we can give anyone is just be there and listen. Listen to their story, listen and listen to it possibly many, many times. And if there are things that we can do, doing that, and it could be little things, doesn't necessarily have to be that we need to start a food train and we need to organize a give a little page, just little things like sending a text saying, I'm thinking of you. And one of the best things that we can do for families is say their baby's name. So often, if I think about support meetings, I've been running support meetings for many years, and families will say, they'll come, maybe 6 months down the track and say, everyone was amazing for the first couple of months, and no one's now said our baby's name for a few months, like no one's talking about them. And that's when we might explain and say, that's because you look like you're doing fine, and they don't want to be the people that make you upset, and they don't want to remind you of your baby. Of course you're carrying your baby in your heart and you're thinking about them all the time, but they think that you're doing okay. This funny okay in quotation marks. So no one wants to be the person that makes someone cry. So one of the things that we sometimes say to families towards the start, soon after their baby has died, maybe in the weeks or month afterwards, is acknowledge the support they're getting and say to your family and whānau, the people around you, keep doing what you're doing. It's awesome. Keep saying little Charlie's name. Keep talking about them, because that's my biggest fear, is that they will be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And that's any parent's fear, is that their child, their precious little brief life will be forgotten. Yeah.
My gosh, that's a lot to be thinking about and managing yourself, because as you say, we do want to fix things, but it's broken. It's not a fixable thing, is it?
It's our own experience, and it really does. The foundations of your world just crumble, and we get through that as hard as it is, and hopefully with really good support around us. So we don't need someone else necessarily coming in and trying to fix things for us. We need to actually go through that pain and sorrow. And the hard thing is knowing that that pain and sorrow is going to be with us for quite some time, if not the rest of our lives. And there are all these cliches around grief, time heals all wounds. But it's not necessarily that. It's that things just change over time. And there's another wonderful model that Lois Tonkin from Christchurch developed, and it's called Growing Through Grief. And it's about life getting bigger around our grief. So our grief doesn't diminish. Our life just starts to get bigger. And that's something that can be quite helpful for parents to think about, and families to think about that. Because one of the things that happens when our baby or child dies is that we get messages sometimes that, we need to move on and life moves on. And we want to make sure that they're still present in the world with us, because we are still loving them, but we are loving them in absence. They're physically absent, but we are still actively loving them. And so we have this terrible guilt because if I just go back to normal and live this life, it looks like that baby, that child didn't mean anything and they meant everything to me. So there's often a guilt or a disloyalty there. And one of the things that families have to navigate is the conversation that happens, because when you are in that reproductive stage of life and you go out in a social situation and people say, oh, hi, you know, how many children do you have? Or, oh, is this child here, is he your only child? Or, you know, there's questions around your family structure. And this is a conversation that we have a lot in support meetings as well, like how much do we say, and in what situations do we do that? And I always talk about remembering, and for my situation, I went on to have our first daughter died, I went on to have a subsequent daughter, and we were at Big Save Furniture and looking at, I don't know, getting a couch or something, and the guy said, oh, is this your only child? And a little light bulb went off for me, and I thought, I don't have to tell him the whole story about her older sister who died. I'm just here to buy a couch, and I can just say yes. This is probably a good 2 years after our daughter had died that I was in that point where I can go, I'm not being disloyal, it's okay, I don't have to feel guilty, this is a minor interaction, it's okay. But up to that point, he would have had to have heard the whole story. So that's a navigation that we have to do all through that time, is kind of working it out. And then someone asks us, oh, how many children do you have? And you might say, I have two children, one of my children died. And then I'm having to navigate or work out or hold their discomfort and their awkwardness. And then I'm managing that in some way. And oh my gosh, it gets really tiring. So in the end, I think I won't go out. I won't do anything because it's just too hard.
So there's so much to navigate and to learn, actually, as a grieving parent.
Yeah.
How to manage other people, how to manage yourself, how to manage your friends. That seems really, really, really mean, actually.
It is a little, we're not prepared for it. Like, we don't go through life and, like, you know, are you ready for this? Are you ready for this huge thing to happen, you know, your precious, beautiful baby dying? And so, and the people around us aren't ready for it either. So that's where it's really helpful to have people to talk to, others who have been through it, trained health professionals who can help give us little strategies, books, websites, all of that help us in some way. Some of us are introverts, so we just want to read, and some of us are extroverts and we just want to talk, and there are places for all of those people. But it's not something you know about till it happens to you. It's the it's the club you never want to be a member of.
I'm also wondering, if families have children, existing children, what are your thoughts about providing them with some ideas around how to navigate that? Because that must be really difficult.
It is. It can be really hard. And the very first thing that they have to think about is, do I introduce our living child to our deceased child? And that's a whole, and hopefully that they get some really good help in the hospital from midwives and people around them. And then, and how much do we say to our living child? Because it depends on how old they are, to what degree of detail you might go into. And there are some really good resources around talking to children about grief. And hopefully they will be directed to that, to those. What we do know is that children are very literal, and so it's very helpful to talk to them quite factually and gently and tenderly, but not talking euphemistically, so in a way that is making something sound a little bit nicer than it is, you know, sort of like sugarcoating something. So rather than saying, you know, your little sister is sleeping and won't wake up, that's really hard for a child to hear. And this is across many ages, and I've heard many stories of children who then are terrified to go to sleep, and they're terrified of their family members to go to sleep. Or talking about being up in heaven or in the stars or with granddad. And families will find their way, their stories, their way of explaining things. But there are some really good expert advice around explaining to your children how their little sister or little brother's heart was sick and stopped and they have died and, you know, we won't be able to see them. Just saying it very openly and clearly. And then we go on to, so there's a whole lot of things that happen. We're parenting our living child knowing that life is so precious. So it's very normal to start getting a little bit overprotective. And we're trying to hide our grief from them because we don't want them to grow up in this really sad house. But that's our life, and it's okay for them to see us happy, sad, joyful, angry, excited, all the emotions, because it makes them understand that there are lots of emotions. But of course, we just want to protect our children, so we don't want them to necessarily see a lot of that. If we go on to and are lucky enough to have another child, then there is the absolute roller coaster of another pregnancy, and then again that this paradoxical parenting of trying to feel in control while simultaneously feeling out of control because, you know, life, mortality, and then with our living children, just integrating our love for our child that died into their life story as well and into our family story. And there are many ways that families do that. And it may be, you know, at Christmas, going out, choosing a decoration every year for that child, doing a gift for a child of the same age to any of the agencies that provide to children in need, lighting a candle, you know, having something physical there during the day to acknowledge them being there, having been here, and their presence being there in the day. And of course, Christmas, when there are big events happening like Christmas, Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthdays, anniversary, that's when it can be really hard, whether we have living children or not. And they're the times that we, within SANS, we talk about actively parenting our children, even though they're not here physically with us, that we carry on parenting them. And that may be, for some people, it's doing big things, and for some people, it's doing little things in their name, in their honour, in their memory. And they're some of the things that sustain us over the years after our baby or child has died.
One of the things that we talked about a bit before was if it's your first baby, the whole question around identity and what does it mean if your first baby passes? Does that mean that you're a parent, or, you know, how does that work, and what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, the identity thing is big because I'm a mother. I birthed this beautiful little girl and held her, and she was 7 pounds and she looked beautiful, and she's not here. And so there's no physical indication anywhere that I am a mother. And then some people around us in our community have ideas about what parenthood is and have this idea that a child needs to be physically present for me to be able to mother them. And so I just avoided those conversations. If those conversations came up, I would just shut those down pretty much straight away, because I was pretty clear that I was absolutely and utterly a mother. We were parents without a child here with us. But it is a big identity thing. Am I still a mother? Am I still a father? How do I get to call myself a mother or a father without them being here? Like, is that sort of a little bit, you know, fraudulent in some way? And it's certainly a different kind of parenting, but we're pretty adamant it's still parenting, but parenting in absence, physical absence. But that identity thing is hard. And again, it's like I said before about navigating those conversations. So here you are at some sort of event and someone says, you know, do you have any family? And then you're like, yeah, how do I answer this? And we often talk about, you know, some of those strategies that having some strategies to get us through. And so sometimes having a little script that we can just revert to So we're in a situation and it takes us by surprise, and we've got a script to just go. And that was certainly my experience. I remember with Phoebe, our living daughter, people saying, oh, is she your only child? And the script that I just had was, no, she has an older sister who died. And that was just easy to come out. And then people might have asked a question or whatever, but it was an easy thing to say. So yeah, having a little script can be quite helpful, because it is quite scary thinking, I don't know what I'm going to say, or I don't know how it's going to affect me. And I don't know if I'm going to break down in this situation. And because that sometimes there are little cues or triggers that do remind us. And it's another thing about, we need to be okay with tears a little bit more and emotion a little bit more. We're really fine with happiness. We're fine seeing someone excited and happy. We need to be fine having someone being tearful or sad, physically tearful and sad. Yeah. We talk a lot about mental health and being okay with different mental health. I think emotion-wise, yeah, it's okay if someone starts to cry. It doesn't mean we made them cry. It means that something in our conversation was a cue for them, and it might be a beautiful memory and it might be lovely. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so that leads me to ask, just like you have a script for when you get caught, or, you know, you've made a decision that you're going out shopping and you're not going to invite these deeper conversations, what is your way of helping or stopping somebody wanting to know more, or to be, you know, managing their upsetness so that you don't have to have responsibility for their experience of that information that they've just heard?
For me, it was two questions, and then a third question, you're getting the whole thing, and you have to manage it yourself. So the first question might be, you know, do you have any children? And I might have said, oh, we have had a little girl and sadly she died. And they might say, oh my gosh, it's awful, what happened? And I would say, she was stillborn. I was 10 days overdue and she was stillborn. And, you know, and I'd say something like, and, you know, we're getting through life. And then if there was a third question, and they'd say, oh, my, you know, what did you do, or how do they know why, or something like that, then I would enter that conversation then, and I would be like, they've asked. And if they did get upset, I'd be okay about it, because I'd be like, this is a little teachable moment. And that's just me. That's just how I managed it. And sometimes I got brave in the months after Esther died. And I tell the story of being in a social situation and someone saying, do you have any children? And I said, we had a little girl and she died. And that person said something like, oh, gee, that's pretty awful, but, you know, these things happen. And then they moved away from me. And I just thought, no, I'm not happy with that. So I went up to him and said, gee, that wasn't a really good answer. That didn't make me feel good, what you just said. And he went, no, oh, it was awful. I didn't know what to say. And so I just said that, and I came away thinking, oh, that, and we ended up having quite a good conversation. But that took quite a lot of bravery. Most people, I don't know why at that moment in that situation, I followed that up, because I just thought, I felt like he was just, my daughter's life was just, he'd minimized it to nothing. And I just thought, but most times I would have just thought, oh, that's awful, and I wouldn't have done that. But the thing is, and most of us, you know, like, we don't have that sort of energy to challenge people or to make it a teachable moment. We don't have, you know, we feel like we're walking through mud, we're dragging our feet through, we're heavy with grief, and so the conversations, we might just try and shut them down and carry on. And you know what? That's fine. That's fine if whatever we do is that gets us, you know, through that day or that conversation or whatever, and we're not being detrimental to someone else, we're not actively doing anything to harm or hurt them, then yeah, we're fine. We can make that choice. we're not responsible for everyone else's knowledge around baby loss and knowledge about their own grief. And if they think that we were a little bit curt and we just stopped the conversation, that's fine, because it's okay. And seriously, we're very obliging to other people in our community, and we don't want to appear, you know, rude. So I've heard so many stories from bereaved parents who have put up with, you know, oh, we were invited, our antenatal group had a get together and we were invited and we felt like we should go, even though, you know, our child had died and all the other children would be there, and we just felt an obligation to go even though we didn't want to. And I just think, oh my gosh, and you don't have to put yourself through that pain. It's okay to say to everyone, we just can't cope with that today. Maybe another day we will, but today we can't. And they'll be okay with that. And if they're not okay with it, it's still fine. That it's fine for you to put yourselves first. But sometimes we're very accommodating to everyone else, and we put their needs before our own. And when we're in that deep and utter grief, it's fine to put our own needs first. And that's some of the messages we need to hear. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for that. There are a couple of things that I'd like to finish off with, if you don't mind. One is talking about understanding about spirituality and how does that come into this situation?
I would always just talk about that as an individual thing. And certainly for some, there are very clear, very strong beliefs around why and what has happened and why it has happened. And then for others, there are absolutely, you know, no strong belief that makes sense of it all, and it just feels chaotic. And so, and everyone, if you imagine a line in between the people that sit everywhere, and some people who have very strong beliefs then find themselves questioning around, why would, if I believed in this amazing loving God, why would a loving God, why would there be any reason for this baby to die? It makes no sense at all. And that's one of the questions that we have around making sense of it. And so there are themes around spirituality that help us make sense. Again, and it comes to in our individual beliefs or our, and it might, sometimes a huge life event like the death of a baby sets us on another path that we didn't even know we would be on. So it might send us down a path of making sense in a spiritual way that we'd never, you know, considered before. So, I mean, I know I'm being very general, but I'm thinking of all the people I've talked to over the years that I've seen a wide range of belief systems and different responses within those belief systems. Yeah, so it really comes down to, and you don't know how it's going to affect you. You know, you don't know how much it's going to shake your core and your beliefs. And so, and one area in which this really comes to the fore is when a couple are having a baby and then they get an unexpected diagnosis and are asked to make a decision about that baby's life. And it may be inducing the pregnancy early, or it may be continuing the pregnancy. And that's where people feel like they had very clear ideas about what they would do and find themselves making a decision that's different to what they thought they would do. And that's, for many parents, that's a really hard place to be for themselves individually around their spirituality and their beliefs, and in a society that's very judgmental. Yeah.
So there's so much to contend with. It's a hard, hard, hard time. Thank you again so much for sharing your knowledge and for living Esther's legacy.
It's a real privilege. And I can talk like this because I'm 25 years down the track. Yeah. But it's interesting because, you know, I can remember what it's like to be back there. I remember the heaviness of the grief. So if there are parents listening who are in the weeks and months after their baby has died, I just really encourage you to hold on to hope.
Maybe the best thing we can do is share again some of the resources and support that's out there, so that if people are listening, they can access that support.
Yeah, so there's organisations, so there's SANS, which is an organisation that supports families when their babies or children die, sans.org.nz. They have volunteers who are bereaved parents, paying it forward to support other bereaved parents, groups all through the country. Most run support meetings. Support meetings are a cup of tea and a chat with other bereaved parents. They're just a chance to connect with other people who get it, mm-hmm. who understand what that's like. There are other smaller organisations. There's Auckland-based Baby Loss New Zealand. There's wonderful groups around the country who do memory making, beautiful items like huggable hearts. So I'm imagining I'm going to send you a list that you can add to the bottom, because I can't really go through them all. It'll be another half an hour. But there are resources out there. It's important. It can be helpful to let the people around us know about some resources as well. The most important resource that I should be talking about is Whetū Rangitia, which is Department of Internal Affairs website, which provides all sorts of information about the loss of a baby or child from early first trimester through to around 8 to 10 years of age. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you that link as well. It's a really important website with a lot of information, and it has a function where you can put in your address and it'll tell you what services are in your community that can provide you with support.
Lovely. That's nice. Mm. Yeah, that's really helpful. And I was also thinking about, in terms of support for children, I know that we've got Skylight, not the roofing thing, but...
Skylight Trust. Yeah, I think it's under that. Yeah. And they have wonderful, there are a lot of written and digital resources that families can access that are really helpful.
So we've been talking for a while now. Do you want to take a breath and think about, is there any last things that you would like to share with parents before we finish off today?
Probably just to know that there is a community of people out there who will listen and who care about your experience and who are interested in hearing all about your baby. And don't be too discouraged by the people who aren't interested. That's about them, and that's about their fears and lack of knowledge around this area. And life will be okay. There'll be a gap, and you know, with your baby not there, and we live with this gap, or this, however we think about it. And yeah, and just to hold on to hope, really. That's thinking about talking to parents who have experienced the loss and their families. I'd say just, you know, be there, listen, say that baby's name, talk about them. And I'm just grateful to have this opportunity to talk about this topic, because it's not a topic that we hear about a lot, and it's really important. And there's between around 700 to 800 babies a year that die up to a year of age, and it's not a topic that a lot of people want to talk about it, because it sounds so awful, and it is awful, but we do need to talk about it more so that people know that they know that they'll be okay, and that there are people out there they can talk to.
Well, again, thank you so much for spending this time with us, Vicky, and I look forward to sharing the resources and hearing from any parents as well, if they would like to reach out or have any other, if they're having problems with access to resources, then obviously they can get in touch with me and I can support their journey. Thank you very much.
Thank you.